Welcome, fellow explorers. My name is Christian Alexanderson, and this is Hemlocks to Hellbenders, a podcast highlighting Pennsylvania's parks, forests, and great outdoors. As Pennsylvanians head outdoors in record numbers, it's imperative that we all learn how best to protect our environment. From backpackers and hikers to rock climbers and mountain bikers, it's all our responsibilities to preserve the beauty of our natural spaces in and outside of the Commonwealth. And there's no better guide, no better set of principles, and no better philosophy that every adventurer should embrace than Leave No Trace. Leave No Trace is more than just a set of guidelines. It's a mindset, a commitment to minimizing our impact on the environment while enjoying the great outdoors. Understanding and practicing Leave No Trace principles is crucial for nature lovers of all experiences, from amateurs to grizzled veterans. As an outdoors neophyte myself, I've needed all the help I can get to answer questions I found myself asking while hiking and camping. What's the best way to gather firewood? What should I do if trails are flooded? Can I toss this apple core in the woods? How do I dispose of waste properly in the backcountry? Leave No Trace provides an educated, science-backed set of principles that you can apply during your time in Penn's woods. It's about minimizing our impact. It's about treading lightly. It's about respecting the environment and leaving our favorite trails and campsites as pristine as we found them. On this episode, we'll discuss the 7 Leave No Trace principles, covering everything from proper waste disposal and campfire etiquette to respecting wildlife and minimizing our overall impact on ecosystems. We'll also talk about how we can embrace the Leave No Trace philosophy and make it an integral part of our outdoor adventures. I'm excited to welcome Ben Lawhon to the podcast. Ben served as the Director of Education and Research at Leave No Trace for over 20 years and is now the Executive Director of Sawtooth Outdoor Education. Ben, thanks so much for joining the program.
Hey, Christian, thanks so much for having me. I appreciate the opportunity to chat with you.
Leave No Trace is an organization that provides education, skills, research, and science to help people care for the outdoors. What's your experience with Leave No Trace?
So, I have been long exposed to the concepts of Leave No Trace. I grew up in a family that really valued spending time in the outdoors. Both parents were into the outdoors. I think my dad more so than my mom. And we had the 1970 station wagon with the pop-up camper and the aluminum Grumman canoe. And my parents took us all over the Southeast, exploring national and state parks and different places. And it just instilled this love of the outdoors. I went into scouting and I was in scouts, Cub Scouts, all the way through Boy Scouts, earned my Eagle Scout. That really solidified my connection with the outdoors and had learned sort of this conservation ethic through that scouting experience. When I went to college, I studied natural resource management at the University of Tennessee and really started to get more into this idea of being part of this conservation solution when I was out recreating. And I read 2 books written by Guy and Laura Waterman, who are out of Vermont. And these books, one's called Backcountry Ethics and one's called Wilderness Ethics. And I read them in the early 90s, about halfway through undergrad. And it really flipped a big switch in me in terms of, wow, there's this whole world out here that we can enjoy. But if we don't do it responsibly, we can have some real serious impacts on these places where we choose to spend time outside. And so moving forward, I worked for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy and was sent to a 5-day Leave No Trace Level 2 instructor course in 1999. And it was just a fantastic experience. There were really a diverse suite of people that were on the course, from just general outdoor enthusiasts to the head of trails at Grand Canyon National Park was on that course. So we had a real diversity and real mix of interesting people. And I got to spend 5 days in the Cajada Wilderness in Georgia, literally learning about and living this Leave No Trace ethic. And it just, that was it for me. I mean, the light bulb went off from 99 until I left the Appalachian Trail Conservancy in 2001. I was teaching Leave No Trace courses as part of my job. And then a job opened at the Leave No Trace headquarters in Colorado. I moved across the country and then worked for Leave No Trace for almost 21 years. And I worked there through the end of 2021 and have since gone on to do other things. But Leave No Trace is still a really important part of both my professional life, but also the way I spend time outside personally with family and friends and so forth. So it's just this concept that really resonates with me in terms of the outdoors, overall sustainability, wanting to leave something for future generations. All those sorts of concepts really resonate with me.
You are now the Executive Director of Sawtooth Outdoor Education. What kind of work do you do with Leave No Trace in that position?
So at Sawtooth, we really started as an entity to really teach Leave No Trace. First and foremost, that was our real goal, was to continue educating as many people as we can. Because one of the things that we know, and certainly the research that I've been involved in over the last 15 years and the last I'd say 4 years dating back to the beginning of the pandemic really indicates that more and more people are spending time outside, and we're all sharing the same finite resource, right? We're always making more people, making more land. And so our mission at Sawtooth was really first and foremost to empower outdoor enthusiasts and outdoor professionals alike with technical skills to help them enjoy the outdoors safely and responsibly. And what we started out with initially at Sawtooth was offering Leave No Trace courses because it's just such a part of who I am professionally and personally. I feel like it's so valuable. And it was something that we really wanted to start with. And now we're exploring a variety of other types of things from, you know, outdoor veterinary skills for people who recreate their pets to things like different types of wilderness medicine, perhaps, or swift water rescue courses. We're looking into a variety of other areas to expand Sawtooth. But really, our core right now and has been since our inception has been Leave No Trace.
Ben, you and I met as I was a student in one of your courses as a part of the outdoor leadership cohort through Center Outdoors. I was just so absolutely impressed with not only the work that you did, but how you were able to teach people who thought they knew about the outdoors more about the subject. And I just have to say, anyone who has the opportunity to learn more, especially Leave No Trace principles, should certainly take Ben up on their offer.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, there are lots of people who spend time outside, and many people know the right thing to do. Intuitively, they just sort of know, like, yeah, I probably shouldn't feed the animals, right? I probably shouldn't wash my dishes in this lake. I probably should try to deal with my human waste. What people often lack is the skills necessary to do it the way that minimizes the most impact. And so what I have found over time is there's this continuum of people who love the outdoors and want to do the right thing. They just need a little help in terms of understanding maybe the science behind the practices and also the right information, because I feel like people are just slightly underinformed in a lot of cases. And one of the things that we know through studying behavior in the outdoors is that most people intuitively just can understand and make a good decision about minimizing their impacts. There's another big chunk of people who, once they're educated in how to minimize their impacts, they're fully willing to do it. Then there's this small percentage of people who, I'm going to do whatever I want. I really don't care. And so as Leave No Trace educators, we've got to focus on that willing audience, right? The more people we can get on board with Leave No Trace, the better off all of our shared public lands will be.
Well, we've been talking about it. What are the Leave No Trace principles?
So the seven principles as they currently exist, I say currently, there were some early iterations of the principles dating back into the 19s, really sort of late 80s into the early 90s, where we had essentially, there were six principles, then there were eight, and through some back and forth and some distillation of the principles, in 1999, we landed on the seven principles. So plan ahead and prepare, travel and camp on durable surfaces, dispose of waste properly, leave what you find, minimize campfire impacts, respect wildlife, and be considerate of other visitors. And those principles are the core foundation of the Leave No Trace messaging, the Leave No Trace curriculum. They've been adapted for different ecosystems and environments, different audiences, but largely all of the Leave No Trace curriculum is based on those seven core principles.
Well, you kind of mentioned it. What's the history behind Leave No Trace?
It's interesting. We think about this notion of outdoor ethics and sort of this modern iteration on that. And I say modern, you've got to think about inhabitants around the world, not just here in North America, but around the world. Indigenous peoples have been practicing conservation for generations, right? I mean, if you think in the context of the United States, Native Americans, I mean, intuitively understood and, you know, learned over time that we can't just harvest everything. We can't use all the water. We can't collect all the berries, right? We've got to have this conservation mindset. And so Leave No Trace is sort of this more contemporary, you know, adaptation of this more traditional ecological knowledge, if you will, where we said, hey, we've got a bunch of modern outdoor enthusiasts and they're spending time outside. They can go further afield. They've got more equipment. They've got better equipment. We can be out in bad weather and terrible conditions and really rugged, remote places. And all that what all that translates to is the potential for real significant impact in some very sensitive areas. And so in the 1960s, when we passed the 1964 Wilderness Act and set aside these large swaths of public land for people to recreate on, there was a big push to get people out and enjoying those public lands. And as we moved in the 1970s, predominantly federal land managers. So entities like the National Park Service, the Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Forest Service began to notice an accumulation of recreation-related impacts. And what they started to realize is it was not malicious intent. It was that people just generally didn't know how to minimize those impacts. And so the U.S. Forest Service started this idea of no trace camping, outdoor ethics, wilderness manners. This idea went under a variety of different names. And at its early inception, there was no real interagency cooperation. So one agency would do this, another agency would sort of do this. And eventually there became this sort of coalescence of these efforts where we started to say, let's look at public lands across the spectrum. And instead of calling it the No Trace Program, which is what the Forest Service had largely landed on, they decided to call it the Leave No Trace Program. And of course, people say, well, it's impossible to leave no trace. I say, you're right. It's pretty darn difficult to leave absolutely no trace. But imagine if we had called it the Leave a Little Trace Program, right? Where would we be? Sure. So it's somewhat aspirational in that name. So in the early 90s, the Forest Service landed on this idea of Leave No Trace. And within short order, the other predominant federal land management agencies, notably the Bureau of Land Management, U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and the National Park Service, all joined forces. Those agencies went to Knowles, the National Aquifer Leadership School. It's based in Lander, Wyoming, and said, hey, Knowles, you've been doing this minimum impact thing for a long time. Can you help us develop a curriculum where we can teach our agency personnel, people who are out in the field interacting with the recreating public, how to teach the public about Leave No Trace? And Knowles said, sure, we can do that. So they created this 5-day curriculum, which has since become the Leave No Trace Level 2 instructor course. That was taught by Knowles in conjunction with the agencies from the early 90s until about 1993. And there was a National Outdoor Recreation Summit in Washington. And it brought together the outdoor industry and agency personnel and researchers and academics and outdoor practitioners, all of whom who said, hey, this is a good idea. We need to move this forward. But at the time, Knowles said, we don't want to take this on in that scheme. We've already got our mission. The agency said, we don't really know that we can do this. So therefore, the Leave No Trace organization was created. It was incorporated in 1994 as a nonprofit entity based in Colorado. It's been in Colorado its entire existence. It's still there. And so in 1994, the organization was formed. When I started in 2001, I was the fifth employee. When I left in 2021, there were almost 30 employees. So the organization continues to grow, the movement continues to grow, but it's this robust partnership structure that really makes it work.
Ben, could you break down the principles a little bit more?
Sure. So the first principle, it's the foundation of Leave No Trace, plan ahead and prepare. Really what it boils down to is whether you're going out for a walk after work or a month-long canoe trip in the Boundary Waters, thinking about all the things that you need to consider for that particular outing, right? What's the weather? What are the conditions? What are the rules and regulations? Where am I headed? What kind of equipment do I need? How long will I be out? Should I tell someone where I'm going and when I'll be back? All these sorts of considerations. So that plan and prepare is really key, because when we properly plan, even for something as short as a 30-minute walk after work, we can minimize the chance of impact on a much longer, perhaps more wilderness-based trip. We can minimize the need for rescue and the need to create impacts. If we're prepared, for example, if the weather gets bad and we don't have enough appropriate clothing, then we might build a fire in an area where there's a fire ban. And so again, thinking about planning is really important. That allows us to ultimately minimize all of our impacts. The next principle is travel and camp on durable surfaces. And we're really talking about however we're traveling, whether it's a hand cycle or a power chair or skis or our feet or a horse or a bike or snowshoes, thinking about how we can minimize our impacts, both on trails and also off trail. Off trail travel is totally appropriate. It just needs to be done in the right way. The camping piece of that really seeks to minimize impacts from camping. We can have some significant impacts where and how we camp. And so choosing the most durable locations, and in some cases, choosing developed campsites, campgrounds, may be the best option to accommodate our group or our objectives or what have you. So really thinking about how do we travel in a way and or camp in a way that minimizes impacts. The third principle is dispose of waste properly. This really deals with both human waste, but also things like gray water. So dishwater, for example, if we had choose to wash clothes, for example, on a long trip, or even dealing with our toothpaste and also litter. And so we think about dispose of waste properly. It's really this idea of disposing of our human waste in a way that minimizes the impact on water sources, it minimizes the potential for spread of disease, it minimizes the aesthetic impacts, and then thinking about how do we dispose of our gray water in a way that doesn't unnecessarily attract wildlife to an area, for example. We may just be disposing of water that has food smells. And the last piece of that is the trash and litter, right? You've heard the old mantra, pack it in, pack it out. So thinking about how we deal with all the waste that we generate when we're in the outdoors and doing that appropriately, really important thing, because human waste in particular can be one of the most significant impacts that we can have when we spend time outdoors. Fourth principle, leave what you find, really sort of a two-part one. In one way, it's really ethical, thinking about all those natural, historic, cultural, archaeological, you know, anthropological items we might encounter in the outdoors, and thinking about leaving those in the context in which they're found. That's really where they derive a lot of their you know, unique nature and their power from. There's also this idea of minimizing the spread of invasive species, which is a significant issue, particularly as more and more of us travel further afield. You know, you can get on a plane today and be in Australia tomorrow. And so think about how we as outdoor enthusiasts can move species, plant and animal species around the globe is really an important consideration. The fifth principle, minimize campfire impacts. You know, really is what it says. I mean, a lot of people enjoy having campfires, myself included. The big key here is how do we enjoy a fire in a way that minimizes the impact and reduces the potential for a catastrophic wildfire. About 95% of all wildfires in the US are caused by people. Not all of that's outdoor recreation, but certainly a percentage of it is. And so how can we have a campfire in a way that really truly minimizes the impact, still allows us the experience, but also eliminates the potential for wildfire, eliminates the potential for spread of invasive species for perhaps in, say, firewood. We see things like gypsy moth get spread around the country in firewood, surprisingly enough to a lot of people. And so just thinking about all those aspects of having a fire that we can actually do something about. The next principle is respect wildlife. And really, you know, when we visit the outdoors, we truly are the visitor. You know, wildlife, that's where they live. And so it's doing the things that we can to minimize our impact on them, not following them, not feeding them, not approaching them, trying to do what we can to keep our distance and make sure that we can have healthy and vibrant wildlife on our public lands. The last one is be considerate of other visitors. So this is really sort of the golden rule of Leave No Trace, thinking about how can we recreate in ways that allow us the experience we want, but also don't unnecessarily impact the experience of someone else, right? We're all trying to share the same finite space. And so doing what we can to promote, you know, sort of a friendly atmosphere in the outdoors, a welcoming atmosphere, is really an important thing.
Do you have a favorite principle?
I mean, I think in terms of favorite, yeah. So I would say the most important is plan ahead, prepare. It's just undeniable. I'd say my favorite probably, respect wildlife. And there's a very specific piece of that, and it is hanging bear bags. I am one of these people who actually enjoy hanging bear bags. It's a tough skill. I'll say that out right now. And I think bear canisters, I think what I'm seeing, I've been in this field for 27 years, is that a lot of land management entities are moving to bear canisters. They're generally easier for the majority of people to use. If you lock them correctly, they're foolproof. They make a nice scene around camp, but I just like something about the idea of like hanging the perfect bear bags. That's probably it for me.
Why is it important to follow Leave No Trace principles?
You know, when we look at recreation trends, and we look at the number of people participating in outdoor recreation, and then we couple that with this idea, I just mentioned it, we're trying to enjoy the same finite resource. We're not generally making any more land. We certainly will create new wilderness areas or new national parks out of existing land. But in terms of the land base that we have to enjoy for recreation globally, it's not getting any bigger. And what's happening is more and more people are spending time outdoors. The research that I referenced earlier related to COVID and its influence on outdoor recreation, one of the things that we found is that about an additional 20% of Americans found the outdoors in response to the pandemic. So we already had about 30% of the U.S. population anyway recreating. In comes a global pandemic, and all of a sudden, another 20% of the U.S. population says, hey, we can go outside, we can socially distance from people, we can physically distance, it's safe, it's largely free, we just walk out the front door, low barrier to entry. So all of a sudden, we've got about half of the U.S. population that's spending time outside. Those numbers are only going to grow. And so if we don't each individually do what we can to minimize our own individual but cumulative impact over time, The places that we like now are not going to be the same places in 5, 10, 20, 50 years. So it's absolutely imperative, in my opinion, that everyone who spends time outside figure out a way to minimize their impacts. Think about leaving traces of spectrum. On one end, you have a place that has no impacts, pristine, beautiful, no trash, no wildlife issues, no campfire scars. And on the other end, we've got places that are absolutely hammered from impacts from recreation. And what we're asking people to do is just find your place on that spectrum. Do one thing to minimize your impacts the next time you go outside. Doesn't matter what it is. Stick to the trail. Pick up after your pet. Carry that pet waste bag to a trash can, right? If you see wildlife on the trail, walk the other way. Give them their space, right? Do one thing. All the good actions that people do like that, the cumulative effect of all those good actions is how our public lands ultimately thrive over time. So I just believe firmly that as our population continues to increase and as more and more people continue to spend time outside and seek outdoor adventures, Leave No Trace is only becoming that much more important. If we don't do it, we're not leaving ourselves much of a legacy.
One of the reasons I was so excited to take your instructor's course was because I am one of those people. I am someone who discovered the outdoors in 2021. I realized once I started going outdoors, I was like, oh, I don't know how to use a compass. I don't know how to like protect myself if, God forbid, a bear came. Or I don't know the proper way to dispose of things other than holding them on me. Am I allowed to go off trail when the trail is really muddy? I didn't have any of that information. So once I was able to take your course, I was like, not only did it solidify an understanding for me, but it also taught me a bunch of things I didn't already know. I've said it to many people. Your course is one of the most important ones I've taken so far since finding the outdoors, because you learn so much and you learn how much impact you actually have on the natural world, which is crazy.
Yeah. I mean, I think, again, the majority of the impacts that we see in the outdoors are, there's three causes behind them. People are either unskilled, they just don't have the skills. They're uninformed, or perhaps to your earlier question, they're underinformed. Maybe they know a little bit, but they don't know everything they need to know. And the third one is people are careless. And so with Leave No Trace, we can address those unskilled, uninformed, and careless actions. That's where we start to see change. And I want your listeners to understand that Leave No Trace is not about perfection. It's not an all or nothing prospect. No one's expecting anyone to levitate over the ground and not touch and not walk anywhere. That's not the idea here. It's not about perfection. It's about action. It's about doing what we each individually can do to minimize those individual but cumulative impacts that just add up over time. It's not the one time somebody chucks an apple core off the trail into the woods. You know, a lot of people go, well, it's biodegradable. I mean, sure, it is. Of course, it's biodegradable. Anything will biodegrade given enough time. The question is, are we in an apple orchard or are we on a trail in the Great Smoky Mountains National Park that's full of black bears and deer, and there's not an apple orchard on top of the ridgeline, right? So we're introducing a food source that otherwise wouldn't be there if we weren't. And so when that happens once, maybe not the worst thing in the world, when it happens 1,000 times in the month of July, that's a problem. So the cumulative effect of all these impacts is where we really start to see significant issues occur. And so that's why it's so important. If people can do one thing, and the next day, maybe try two things. And the next outing, maybe it's a third thing, right? That's where we start to see real benefits.
To be a little bit vulnerable, two of the things that I was doing that I didn't know had an impact was, one, I always bring a banana when I hike. And when I was done with the banana peel, I just throw it because it's biodegradable. It goes into the ground. It's all fine. Once I took your class and you were saying, yeah, but bananas aren't in Pennsylvania. They don't grow naturally. So I was like, oh yeah, that could do damage to animals. Never even thought about it because I, like you said, oh, it's disposable, it's no big deal. And then the other one was when a trail is muddy, you just walk around the muddy section. And my general idea was you do more damage if you walk through it and create a more muddy mess as opposed to walk around it. And that's just not the case.
Yeah, I mean, some of the Leave No Trace, I would use the word, some of it's intuitive. A lot of it's not, though. I mean, for example, with the food, right? So you chuck a banana core out in the woods. Will it biodegrade? Yes, of course it will. What most people don't understand is that if wildlife obtain that and eat that, they got a taste for something that's not native to their environment. So the next time they find a banana peel, it may be close to someone's home. It may be close to a road. It may be somewhere that puts them in harm's way. And that's what we start to see is when animals become conditioned to human-type foods and trash, they often break out of their natural normal patterns and get into these patterns that could be harmful to themselves, or in the case of bigger animals like a bear, for example, be harmful to people. And so, sure, we're all in this learning sort of trajectory here. So you learn that, oh, you know what? Probably shouldn't throw that in the woods. Great. That's one less banana peel in the woods. And to your point about walking through, you know, the mud puddles on the trail rather than skirting around them. Again, I think a lot of people are like, I don't want to get my feet wet. I don't want to get wet and muddy. This goes back to plan and prepare, right? If we're prepared, we know what the conditions are going to be because we checked the internet or made a couple phone calls or what have you, or we even looked on a social media feed for a park and they said, hey, be prepared. Trails are muddy. If you're prepared, you plow right through the mud. Because when we walk around those sections, we trample trailside plants, which leads to erosion and you need trail rehab and all these various things. So again, it goes back to that idea of cumulative effects is really what we're trying to deal with.
How do you think Leave No Trace principles contribute to the long-term sustainability of natural environments?
You know, I mentioned it, that we are the visitor, right? In natural environments, I mean, yes, humans have been around for a long time. And we've been part of the ecosystem for a long time. I would argue that we're probably more removed. Many of us are more removed from nature than our generations past, our ancestors. When you think about people living off the land, really being in tune to the land, growing their own food. I mean, there's a lot of kids these days who don't understand that, milk doesn't actually ultimately come from the grocery store, right? I mean, there's a cow involved in the process. And so this distance that we have with nature, I think is a challenge because we're just less in tune with natural processes. And so when people can learn about Leave No Trace, one of the key things they learn is not so much about ecosystem science or, you know, biology or botany. It's more what they learn is the consequences of their recreational actions and impacts.
Yeah.
And that's a key part. Like, what happens if I do this in the outdoors? And so once people learn the consequences of their actions, not only are they more likely to make a different decision in the future, if they've learned about Leave No Trace, they also understand and better understand their role in the natural world. And so to your question, I think Leave No Trace, particularly in a recreational context, is critical in terms of its contribution to the long-term sustainability of these natural environments. I mean, if we can stick to trails and we can minimize erosion and we can minimize water pollution and we can minimize wildlife impacts and we can deal with our human waste, we can help ensure long-term sustainability. When you look at national parks, for example, or even U.S. Forest, National Forest, or you look at state parks and other places around the country that are implementing Leave No Trace really, really well, those places are often in better shape because they have a robust Leave No Trace effort in that park to help every visitor have a good time and minimize their impacts. So we really do see a significant contribution from Leave No Trace for our, natural areas that are enjoyed for recreation.
And now, let's hear from our sponsors. It's Saturday morning in your favorite kind of weather. It's a day for hiking. Clearly marked blazes guide you safely along the unobstructed trail, allowing you to get lost in the wonder of nature. Keystone Trails Association makes these moments possible for you and Pennsylvania's great outdoors. KTA's members are dedicated to providing, preserving, protecting, and promoting recreational hiking trails and hiking opportunities in Pennsylvania. Join KTA to help protect the trails you love. New members use the code HELLBENDERS at www.kta-hike.org to save $5 on a yearly membership. Are you looking for your next adventure? Unlock some of the best landscapes in Pennsylvania with incredibly detailed, highly curated, waterproof maps from the folks at Purple Lizard. They create extraordinary maps of Pennsylvania State Forest for people who love to explore the outdoors. Find them at your local outfitters, bike shops, and bookstores, or visit purplelizard.com, where your next adventure begins. Hey, podcast explorers. Did you know Pennsylvania State Parks and Forests are the heartbeat of our Commonwealth? They're not just natural wonders. They're vital for our well-being and local economies. That's where the Pennsylvania Parks and Forest Foundation steps in. They rally volunteers, raise funds, and advocate for these precious lands. Join the movement to preserve and enjoy our outdoor treasures. Learn more at paparksandforests.org. Let's keep Pennsylvania untamed and beautiful together. All right, back to the show. What does Leave No Trace mean to you personally?
You know, I've been asked this question over the years several times in various ways, but the gist is essentially the same. And to me, I think it's one of the I think it's one of the greatest conservation movements, certainly in my lifetime. And obviously I'm biased and people will say, well, you worked for him for 21 years. What I mean by that though, is it's one of the few conservation movements that puts people in the driver's seat. There's no one that's dictating this. No one's, it's not rules. It's not regulations. It's not, something you have to do. It's something that people choose to do. It's voluntary compliance. And I think there's something really inspiring about people who love the outdoors and then choose to take care of the outdoors. And so for me, I just find it to be such a simple yet critical, ethic. I mean, I know it's ultimately what it is, but it resonates with me. And it's important to me because I am at my core an absolute lover of the outdoors and particularly outdoor recreation. And so this idea that we can all collectively take care of the places we enjoy together is really what I think resonates with me the most.
How can we best implement Leave No Trace principles?
You know, I think the thing for most people to do is think about what you know about Leave No Trace. And even if you feel like you know a lot about Leave No Trace, consider taking their free online Leave No Trace 101 course. I mean, it takes most people like 20, 30 minutes. And I think it's a great introduction and for those people who've known about Leave No Trace and maybe learned years ago or got a little introduction to it, it can help people get up to sort of the current standard, because through science and research, Leave No Trace continues to evolve, both the skills and the techniques and also some of the educational practices, some of the teaching techniques. But I think for most people, just it got to be informed. I mean, and there's no need to, I mean, sure, take a course if you want. I mean, that's a great way to really immerse yourself and learn a lot about the science and, you know, the skills and techniques and different environments and ecosystems and all the different, you know, sort of nuanced pieces of it. But for most casual outdoor enthusiasts, just go to the Leave No Trace website and just poke around, watch some of their videos on YouTube. I mean, most of the videos on the YouTube channel are like 1 minute long. So spend 15 minutes and watch one video on each of the seven principles. And you'll know more in that 7 to 15 minute time frame than you may have ever known about Leave No Trace. So there's some really easy ways. So in terms of people, I would say first and foremost, educate yourself. You know, particularly in the context, if you are a very unique, if you have really unique recreational pursuits, you're a mountaineer, you're fly fishing, you're a kite surfer, whatever it may be, you're something really specialized beyond just say hiking or camping. You may need to dig a little deeper to find that information that's really relevant for the way you recreate. But for most people, just the basic overview of Leave No Trace is going to be sufficient in terms of knowledge and skills. And then all you got to do is put into action. And the first couple of times, it may be a little challenging, but then it gets easier over time. And oftentimes we find that when people start to utilize Leave No Trace and implement it on their own trips, their backpacks are lighter, right? Their trips have less whoops moments, right? Didn't expect that. We see a lot less of that. So lighter packs, safer trips, really this idea of accomplishing all the objectives we want when we go outside, because we've already dealt with all these issues of minimizing impact and planning ahead and having the right equipment and being safe and having a good plan and so on and so forth. So I think for most people, it starts with learning. And then it's kind of maybe for some people, just baby steps. Go out and try one thing. And the next time, try something else. Because, you know, for some people, for example, who maybe have never dug a 6 to 8 inch deep cat hole and squatted over it to poop in the outdoors, that's a quantum leap for some people. I mean, it really is. Like, I've been doing this long enough to know, like, not everybody's ready to just drop their pants and squat over a hole in the ground. And so for a lot of people, just working up to that point, and then all of a sudden they do that and they, all right, I can do this, right? It's this empowering moment of like, yep, I was a little scared, didn't know if I'd do it right, but I did it and it's fine. And now I'm going to try something else. So I think it's like just making the decision to do it and educating yourself and then trying to put some of these practices into action.
The Leave No Trace website, which is lnt.org, is such a phenomenal resource. There's so much information there. Every time when I was taking your course to become an instructor, all I was going to was that website to get more information. They're like, oh, If you're into these very specific things, they have information on it. If you're just into hiking, you're just into camping, they got information on it. Bear bags, they got information about it. Just everything is just so well done, and their social media presence is so engaging. If you don't already follow them on social media, you should definitely follow them. If you haven't been to their website and taken their very basic course, I very much suggest you do. What are your students' reactions when they learn about the principles?
You know, that's a great question, because we at Sawtooth have most recently been offering the sort of online virtual level one instructor option. During COVID, we realized very early on, very quickly, that we needed to shift the model, right? Historically, leader trace courses were taught in person. The thinking was, you know, this information is best taught in an experiential fashion where people can actually practice the skills. And what we learned right at the outset of COVID, as did most entities that were providing education around the globe, is hold on, we got to do things differently, and we may have to really try some new techniques and see how it goes. And so for the first year, 2020, we tried this virtual model, and lo and behold, based on all the evaluations and all the assessments that we did of the criteria, the learning quality, you know, educational outcomes and so forth, it was working, really working well, because a lot of people had outdoor experience, but just needed to learn more about Leave No Trace in that context. And so when I think about the students we've had at Sawtooth, I would say the vast majority of students have these kind of aha moments, and they come in a variety of forms. For some, it's just like brand new skills. Like, wow, I've just learned something totally new, and this is amazing. This is exactly what I was hoping to get out of this. For other students, it's they learned that Leave No Trace is not dogma. It's not this all or nothing prospect. It's a sliding scale of implementing these principles. And for a lot of people, that makes it this sort of sigh of relief, right? It's not about perfection. It's about action. I don't have to be perfect in the outdoors. Sure. Do I want to strive to do as good as I can? Sure. Of course. But for a lot of people, it puts people at ease. I think the third reaction that we get is people are really excited to learn that Leave No Trace is underpinned by research and science. It's not just some things that some people in Boulder, Colorado, who love trees and love the outdoors, thought sounded good. It's really, these techniques are based in science and research, and there's good science to back it up. And Leave No Trace organization and its academic and agency partners around the country are doing ongoing research to continue to explore topics of interest. So things are continuing to evolve. So it's not just like it was these, you know, seven principles carved in stone tablets carried off the mountain, like thou shalt. It's this sort of living thing that continues to evolve. And I think for a lot of people, when they fall into one of those three categories, they have these sort of epiphany, aha moments where it's like, wow, this is, I feel empowered to do this, or I feel like I've got the information I need, or wow, this is for me, or wow, I really believe that this is good and is actually meaningful, because I kind of thought it was hokey, and now I've learned the science behind it, and I get it.
Is there an aspect of Leave No Trace people find most challenging?
That's a great question. I would say it probably varies by individual. I don't know universally of an aspect that people go, wow, that is really tough. I think probably one of the more tough ones, I'd say, for people is probably when there is a human waste pack out requirement. So even though there's these commercially available pack out bags for human waste, which makes it very sanitary and very easy to do, the idea of pooping in a bag and then zipping the bag up and then putting it in your backpack and then carrying it for a day or several days, for a lot of people, that is just, I can't even wrap my head around that. I mean, you know, it's something that I've done for years and years as a river runner, because we're required to pack out our human waste. So it's just kind of a non-issue. But for a lot of people, particularly those that are new to the outdoors, that is a big hurdle for a lot of people. And for some people, that just causes them to throw the baby out with the bathwater, right? So to speak. Right. So you're telling me I got to pack my human waste out? Well, you guys are nuts. I'm not doing any of this Leave No Trace thing. I'd say that's one that probably is challenging for people, is in the context of a pack out system, whether it's required or voluntary. I'd say voluntary is even more challenging, where it's like, you don't have to, but if you want to, you can, because not everybody's lining up to, you know, put their poop in a bag and pack it out. So probably the one in my mind that's maybe the most challenging.
I would have to agree, as somebody who hasn't gone to the bathroom outdoors, that seems like you said, kind of light years ahead. It doesn't, conceptually, it doesn't make sense in my mind.
I mean, understood. I mean, it's a, you know, for certain recreational user communities, it is a much more accepted practice. River runners, climbers, mountaineers, you know, those are all people who are accustomed to dealing with their poop in the outdoors, like very intimately dealing with their poop. It doesn't mean touching it, I mean handling it in a very sanitary way. Other groups of outdoor enthusiasts, it's just not, we don't talk about it. It's not something we're comfortable with. That said, the big challenge with human waste is we all do it.
Sure.
I mean, the best stats out there, according to the World Health Organization, is on average, most people around the globe produce about 1 pound of solid human waste per day. So the global population is 8 billion, do the math. And yet it's a very squeamish personal thing. I totally understand it. But in the context of the outdoors, in the context of Leave No Trace, we just hit it head on directly. Like, we're going to talk about poop. And we're going to be very conscientious about the terminology we use and try to make people feel comfortable. But it's one of the most significant impacts we can have in the outdoors. And so we just have to hit that one head on.
I think about this a lot. When you see someone not following Leave No Trace principles, whether it be like a girlfriend or a stranger, should you speak to them about it?
I think it depends on the situation. It depends on who the people are. You know, there's this technique called the authority of the resource technique. And it's a way, it was developed for wilderness rangers and, you know, people in agency uniform to talk to outdoor enthusiasts about their impacts and to help give them, you know, some understanding of the consequences and then also give them some suggestions for how to minimize those impacts. And so dating back about 20 years ago, the Leave No Trace educator community adopted this authority of the resource technique. It's very effective. I mean, it actually works really well. That said, one of the things we've noticed over the last couple of years is that has been used or reported to have been used in ways that it felt like people were being policed in the outdoors, you know, like this finger wagging, you know, the Leave No Trace police out there. And that's never the intent of the authority of the resource or the Leave No Trace movement. And so one of the things that the way that sort of the thinking has evolved is that this authority of the resource may be best used with people we already know. So the girlfriend, the parents, your cousins, your friends, your family, your colleagues, right? People who are in our sphere of influence. So rather than approaching some random in the outdoors we don't know, start giving them a piece of your mind about Leave No Trace, no matter how friendly you are, it may not work very well. But people that you know, again, your sphere of influence, it certainly doesn't hurt to say, hey, let me show you a different way to do that, right? That may be easier, that may be will certainly minimize impact. You know, and the way we approach people with that, it has to come from the, we have to put ourselves in their shoes. We also have to think like an educator, right? We can't just come in heavy handed. It just doesn't work. We've got to really give people the benefit of the doubt and also check our own expectations, right? If we, let's say we see somebody, you know, a significant other who chucks the apple core off the trail. Well, I'm probably not going to walk off in the woods and go try to find it, you know, a big show of like, hey, you did the wrong thing and I'm going to do the right thing. I probably would start a discussion about wildlife in the area and eventually sort of steer that ship into, you know, their food and what they eat. And oh, there was that apple. And oh, right. Well, if they got that apple, they might end up in the next town diving in someone's dumpster, which they might get, you know, in trouble or shot or killed because of that. That's kind of how I approach those things. It's like, I'm really trying to be as tactful as possible when delivering Leave No Trace information so that not only it doesn't come across as policing or finger wagging or, you know, oppressive or why are you trying to tell me what to do? It comes across as a conversation where the recipient actually comes to the conclusion on their own. So they have this light bulb go off over their own head. And the next time they're out with an apple, they may not chuck it off the trail because I, in a very gentle sort of way, gave them the information they needed to make a different decision in the future.
That seems like a very thin line you have to walk because you could so easily become a Karen and just start yelling at people.
Yeah, you could be. That's right. Yeah, you could be. I mean, you absolutely could be. And sometimes it's hard not to get jaded when we see the same impact over and over, like people leaving pet waste, for example, or, you know, any other number of impacts. Trash is a big one, obviously. It's hard not to get jaded. That's why I think this idea of thinking and acting like an educator and looking at every opportunity as a way to to tell somebody else about leaving their trace and to empower them with good information. Like, that's how I've chosen to look at it. Let's put it that way, because otherwise I'm just going to get frustrated. And, you know, and that doesn't do anybody any good, because I have this skill set where I could teach these people how to enjoy the outdoors in a different way. Might as well utilize it.
I feel like anyone who spends time in the outdoors has their own pet peeve of things they really don't like. Do you have one?
Yeah, I mean, the amplified music.
Oh, yes. That's mine, too.
I mean, it bothers me. You know, for some people, it makes them feel more comfortable because there's this anthropogenic sound. And I don't feel like, especially when you see someone by themselves and they've got this Bluetooth speaker on, for some people, that makes them feel more comfortable. And so I understand it from that perspective. But when it's just loud, obnoxious music on your backpack, I mean, whether it's in a ski mountain, I see it, live in Colorado, so I see it a lot on ski mountains. And like, I didn't come here to hear your music. I mean, I'm glad you're having music, but put one earbud in, you know, that sort of thing. So that, I'd say that's probably my pet peeve. If I had to pick one, probably it.
I don't know if this one technically counts, but my friend told me about it. And then once he pointed that out, it's something that now stays on my mind. It's when you get to a really beautiful vista or a mountaintop and there's that one great view, and then people just camp out and have lunch there, so you can't see it. You can't really take your own pictures. And technically, are they doing anything wrong? No. They're enjoying lunch. Listen, I totally understand. But you are now preventing the 50 people behind you from getting the same experience you have because you want to have lunch there as opposed to look at it, enjoy it, and then walk away.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, it's just, again, goes back to that seventh principle of being considerate of other visitors, right? Thinking about, hey, let's enjoy the view. Let's take a couple pictures. Then let's go have lunch somewhere that's not at the view that everyone clearly has come here to see. Mm-hmm. That can get annoying. And along those lines, I guess the only other sort of pet peeve I have is I have a hard time with people doing things in the outdoors just for the gram. Right. Just for the photograph, just for the shot. It just, I understand people, look, it's a free country, do what you like. But when people don't think about the potential consequences of blasting stuff all over social media, and maybe it's in a way that doesn't demonstrate responsible enjoyment of the outdoors, that I find to be incredibly frustrating. And again, people oftentimes just don't know that they're doing something that could be, potentially harmful to a place. But I mean, that's the one other thing that I just, when I see these Instagram images, sometimes I just shake my head. You know, like there's a whole Tourons of Yellowstone handle.
Oh, it's my favorite.
Instagram.
It's so good.
I mean, some of that stuff, now that's just people acting in certain ways, but you still see people on that feed doing things specifically for social media. That bothers me.
Yeah. The person who gets to a rock overlook and tries to do a backflip, it's just infuriating.
Yeah, or the people who walk up to try to shoot a video of Old Faithful erupting at Yellowstone. Like, come on. Like, what are you thinking? And then it gets on social media, and then there's copycat behavior, and it's challenging. I mean, social media is like any tool, though, right? You can do great conservation work with an axe. You can also do a hell of a lot of damage to the outdoors with an axe. Social media is no different. We can do a lot of good things for the outdoors and promote Leave No Trace and responsible enjoyment of the outdoors. We can also do a lot of things that are detrimental to the outdoors with social media.
Have you encountered instances where cultural differences pose challenges in implementing Leave No Trace?
Yes, definitely over the years. I mean, there are just different ways that different cultures spend time outside, different relationships that different cultures have with the outdoors. I've had the benefit of teaching Leave No Trace in a variety of different places around the world. And, you know, from Hong Kong to Ireland to Canada to Scotland, Montenegro. I mean, I've taught in a lot of places to a lot of different types of people, and I've interacted with a lot of different types of people here in the US. And I think what it really boils down to is that in order for Leave No Trace to work for different cultures and different places around the globe, it's got to be two things. One, it's got to be environmentally relevant. So if you're talking about hanging bear bags in Asia where there are monkeys, bear bags don't work where there are monkeys. And so you've got to figure out a different way to store your food. And maybe that's bear canisters, for example. So it's got to be environmentally relevant. And then it's also got to be culturally relevant, because not every culture places the same values on the outdoors or on water or on, you know, things like being considerate of other visitors. We think about proximity to others in the outdoors, for example. Some cultures just, they're used to crowded areas. They don't, that doesn't bother them. Whereas, you know, here in the US, people go to deep wilderness to get away from everybody. So I think that rather than trying to just push the seven principles as is here in the US on different cultures, I like to start all those with a conversation. What I like to do is figure out, how do you like to spend time outside? What's your relationship with the outdoors? And then all of a sudden I go, great, here are some tips I can give you to minimize your impact. So I typically wade in with getting to know someone or a group of people and how they spend time in the outdoors. What's their relationship? You know, what do they value about the outdoors? And then I give them the Leave No Trace that's best fit for them, as opposed to saying, hey, here's all the Leave No Trace. Take what works. So I kind of go at it from a different angle, because, you know, really trying to break down those cultural barriers is an important piece of this. I mean, Leave No Trace is certainly a US-based movement as it currently exists, but Leave No Trace has partnerships and operates in about 90 different countries around the world. There's some Leave No Trace going on in about 90 countries around the world. Whether that's just a single educator or a handful of educators, in some cases they have these branches. So there's Leave No Trace Ireland and Leave No Trace Japan and Leave No Trace New Zealand and Leave No Trace Canada, Leave No Trace Australia. So it really runs the gamut of, in terms of scale, scope, and size around the globe. But the point is, Leave No Trace is working around the world. It just has to be environmentally and culturally relevant.
One of the most interesting aspects of taking your course was that we had such a diverse group, because in my group, there were a number of people from South America, people from Mexico, all over the United States, East Coast, West Coast, Midwest, and then China. And then you had everybody talking about, well, what is it like where you're from? Or one of the things that I loved was, what bothers you the most? And you're kind of talking through and you're like, oh, yeah, that would, I see why that would be a problem. Or I see why, you know, why we do it this way or why they do it that way. I think it's that sort of open dialogue only helps.
Yeah, there's no question about that. I mean, we have to talk to people, figure out where they're coming from, and that way we can be more effective in our approach in terms of either sharing information or if it's formal education. You know, obviously, the more we know about our audience, the better off we'll do.
How has your understanding and commitment to Leave No Trace principles evolved over time?
You know, my understanding was, after taking that level two instructor course in 99, it used to be called the Leave No Trace Master Educator course, and the organization had a shift in the training terminology last year. But when I took my, let's call it the Leave No Trace Master course, I knew a fair bit about Leave No Trace practices. I mean, I was working professionally in resource management. You know, I had spent a lot of time in the outdoors. I had done a 800-mile section hike on the AT. I mean, I worked as a ridge runner for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy in Great Smoky Mountains National Park. I mean, I knew a lot of things. When I took that course, what I really learned was, how do we effectively communicate this information to others? And that was the big spark for me, because the skills I largely knew, but it was more of, how do I tell other people about this in a way that actually influences the decisions they make? And that was, I think, a big epiphany in terms of my understanding of it. The commitment, I mean, you know, it just grew and grew and grew every year. I mean, I can be perfectly honest with you. When I got hired at Leave No Trace in 2001, the executive director, who is still the executive director, who is a dear friend, she asked me, how long do you realistically think you'll be here? And I said, honestly, it's 3 to 5 years. You know, 21 years later, I'm still there. And it just continued to grow, because I felt like I was very fortunate to be in one of those positions where not only am I doing something good for the earth, but this is my job. And so there's not a lot of opportunities in life like that, I don't find, where I'm not just doing this for me, I'm doing it for something bigger than me. And so my commitment just always continued to grow. I mean, even though I made the decision to leave the organization after, you know, 2+ decades, I'm still operating in this space. I'm still teaching Leave No Trace. I'm still actively promoting Leave No Trace. It's still a core part of who I am. And so I would say that, you know, I don't see that commitment waning, honestly, ever at this point in my life.
Are there any principles that are not currently included that you think should be?
You know, that's a really good question, because one of the things that we often evaluate at Leave No Trace is, do we need additional principles to cover other things? And, you know, as I mentioned earlier, they're not some, you know, they're not carved in stone tablets, like this immovable thing, right? They're these living things that are updated over time. Not necessarily the wording of the seven principles, but the information associated with each is updated on a periodic basis. And that's largely because the science changes, or research, new research emerges. And so I think one of the things that we were really skilled and still, the organization is still skilled at doing, is taking on a new topic like social media, for example. That's the most recent example, dating back to 2018, when there were some really loud calls, if you will, for the creation of an eighth principle specifically to address social media. We've got to have a principle for social media. And so what we do is step back and say, let's give this some really critical thought and analysis. Can we cover what needs to be covered under the existing seven? Can we cover social media under the seven? And we thought, yeah, we can. Leave what you find, number four, and be considerate of other visitors, number seven. And so we create this social media guide that's really leveraging those two specific principles. And therefore, we didn't need to create a whole new principle just out of whole cloth. And some people will say, well, that's silly. Why don't you just create one? Well, the issue is, we can't make this so complex that people just can't even remember it. And so where would you stop? You know, so we cover, right, planning, and we cover traveling and camping. These are things people do, right? We cover waste and trash and litter, and we cover leaving what we find. We cover invasive species and wildlife, and we cover fires, and we cover other visitors. And like, I don't see any blind spots. I don't see any gaps that we haven't addressed or that couldn't be addressed in the current seven. So to your question, no, I don't think that there is a principle that we need that could be added to the seven. I do, however, think we need continued adaptation of the principles to new outdoor pursuits. You know, whether that's, you know, you name the outdoor activity. I mean, whether it's like people ride mountain skateboards now, whether it's people using drones where they're allowed, you know, people using fat tire bikes in the snow, whereas years ago, people didn't mountain bike in the winter. Not where there was snow all over, but now that we got these fat tire bikes, they do. So like, things just continue to evolve. So I think we need continued adaptation of the seven principles for different activities and ecosystems. But at this point, I'd say we don't need any new principles. I'm not resistant. I just can't think of anything that we're missing.
Ben, what's the best way to get into contact with you to take one of your classes through Sawtooth Outdoor Education?
You can check out our website, sawtoothoutdooreducation.org. You can contact me directly, ben@sawtoothoutdooreducation.org. Be happy to enroll you in classes. We've got nine Leave No Trace courses on our schedule. Our first one of the year starts on January 31st. And then we've got courses running all the way through May. And then we'll have a few in the summer. And then we'll have a full schedule next fall. So if people are interested, please check out our website or contact us directly. We'd love to host you on a future course, get you certified as a level one Leave No Trace instructor.
Ben, thanks so much for talking to us today. We really appreciate it.
Hey, thanks so much for the opportunity. It's always great to talk about Leave No Trace. It's something that's near and dear to my heart, and love chatting with former students that we've had. And it's great to see your interest in the outdoors, your outdoor skill set really flourish. As you indicated, you just got into this a few years ago. So you're making all the right moves, and we wish you great success in your future pursuits as it relates to the outdoors.
I want to thank my guest, Ben Lawhon, for joining the podcast. Be sure to follow us on Instagram and Meta for more information about upcoming episodes. You can support the podcast by buying merch at hemlockstohellbenders.com, or you can click support this show in the podcast description to provide a monthly donation. This has been Hemlocks to Hellbenders. I'll see you out there. Hosting, production, and editing by Christian Alexanderson. Music by John Sauer. Graphics by Matt Davis.